Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am not Clint Daly. But this week on The Dose, I am your host, Peyton Daly, Clint's 17-year-old daughter, coming to you from the Mile High City, that is Denver, Colorado. Clint Daly is out for a little while, and no, he doesn't have COVID. He had some work done on his jaw, and he is recovering, so he is upping my allowance and having me fill in for him. And even though my dad isn't here, we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Happy Wednesday to you all. I hope your week is going well. Hope you and your family and friends are staying strong and healthy. The sports schedule is slowing down a bit. The Stanley Cup Final has Game 4 tonight, after the Tampa Bay Lightning got a must-win on our Colorado Avalanche on Monday in Game 3. The Avs still lead the series 2-1, and we are hoping they can get a win tonight. However, the NBA Finals are now complete as the Golden State Warriors won the title in Game 6 over the Boston Celtics. Warriors guard Stephen Curry was named the Finals' most valuable player by averaging 31 points per game. It was Steph's first MVP in the Finals because the media was too stupid to give it to him back in 2015 when he clearly deserved it, but they wanted to get cute that year instead. And now those same media members are telling us how Steph has now proven he is one of the top 10 players of all time. I mean, maybe that's true, but why should we listen to anything those idiots say now? These top 10 player lists are nothing more than asking something like, what's your favorite movie? It's all subjective and honestly pretty silly. Before we jump in today, I just want to remind you to be sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast, links to the video, and yes, we even have links to the Daily Dose gear. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, whatever you may need. So make sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week and checking in with what's going on over there. We have some more stuff coming this summer that you will definitely want to check out. Today on the show, my dad didn't actually pay me enough to carry a full show, but never fear, because we still have a full show for you. With the NBA just finishing up, we are flashing back to a few Daily Dose top fives that are NBA flavored. We are going way back to top fives from 2015, 2016, and 2017. We will be counting some of the best shooting men, looking at a few reasons that people don't like one of the biggest stars in the NBA. We will reflect on some memorable moments from the career of Kobe Bryant. We have a few infamous NBA conspiracies, and we are even looking at Steph Curry's playing style. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this throwback edition of the Daily Dose.
As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. I told you earlier, Daily Dose Top 5 today is a historic Daily Dose Top 5. You know, the Daily Dose Top 5, it has a mind of its own. You never know where it's going to go, and this week is certainly no exception. Because sometimes it just kind of takes over. You kind of start getting some things in mind, and here's the direction it could go. Maybe here's something that happened in the news. The Top 5 just kind of goes and does its own thing. You know, I received an email this week from one of my favorite listeners, Mike in SoCal. And he, if you don't know Mike, back in the radio days when the Daily Dose was on the radio, Mike would call in every once in a while, always had some insightful thoughts, always had some good questions. And what he wrote to me, this week was, he said, you know, there are so many bad big men at the free throw line. And we're having all this hack-a-shack stuff, and they're talking about changing rules, and do we need to eliminate these guys shooting free throws, because if they can't make them, we better make it easier for them, which drives me crazy. But when you look at some of the big men that are in the playoffs right now, and you look at some of the big men in history, some bad free throw shooters, really bad free throw shooters. And so he said, have there ever been big men that could legitimately shoot free throws? I mean, who are some of the big men that could really shoot free throws? Excellent question. Because, you know, I started looking at some of the stats. I started looking at some of the free throw shooters and some of the big men throughout history of the game. And like this year, DeAndre Jordan, they go to the hack of DeAndre. DeAndre Jordan is shooting 42%. So I can disrupt your offense. I can disrupt your team. I can disrupt everything. And I know 42%. I know for a fact you're only hitting one, and you might not even hit the second one. Dwight Howard is shooting 57%. And you go back, you know, even more in history, you look at someone like Shaquille O'Neal, who, I can hit it when I have to, 52% for his career, Shaquille O'Neal at the line. Ben Wallace, 41%. Ben Wallace was atrocious at the line. So good defensively, but so, so bad at the free throw line. Even, you know, the greats like Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain, and it's funny because Wilt Chamberlain shot about 51% at the line. But what he would do, and this is pretty, I guess well known. Wilt Chamberlain would tell his opponent, if you foul me, I'm fighting you in the parking lot afterward. Do not foul me. Do not touch me. I will fight you afterward. And so there were a lot of guys that were just afraid to foul Wilt. But I started looking and started saying, you know, who are some of the great big men that could shoot free throws? And the list that I have in the top five might surprise you. Might not be guys that you would think of that could shoot free throws. Let me give you a couple stats. There was a center that was pretty good. One of the greatest centers of all time, Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He shot about 72% at the line. Patrick Ewing shot about 74% at the line. Kevin Garnett, 7-footer, shot 79%. Bob Lanier, big man back in the day, shot 77%. Akeem Olajuwon was very, very good at the line. He shot about 71%. And Robert Parrish, the Chief with the Boston Celtics, shot about 72%. So who are the best free throw shooting big men? That is our top five this week. Best free throw shooting big men. Number five on our list this week. He was a big guy. He was a big guy. And we remember him being such a force inside, especially defensively. Offensively, he could do some things. It wasn't that he was challenged offensively. He could score. He could do some different things. But defensively, we remember him anchoring these defenses. And he played in the league for 14 seasons, shot blocker. The great thing about having a player like this behind you is, you know, I can gamble, I can press, because even if my man beats me and gets to the basket, he's back there to block that shot. He's back there to knock some things down. You might not remember that 7'6" Yao Ming shot 83% at the free throw line for his career. Yao Ming was a pretty good free throw shooter. Kind of forget that. You know, he was such a big dude. 7'6", are you kidding me? The one guy that, you know, actually was like the same size and looked, you know, around the same size as Shaquille O'Neal. Pretty amazing. Yao Ming, 83%. Number four on our list. Another guy that you don't really think of him being such a great shooter, but because you think of other things about him. He was very, very physical player, a little bit of a cheap shot player. You loved him if he was on your team, but if he was on the other team, you hated his guts. But this is a guy that was not afraid to do dirty work. He would take the charge. He would be physical. He would bang on your big man. He could rebound. He could shoot. He could score. You remember him as a member of the Bad Boys, but did you remember that Bill Laimbeer shot 84% at the free throw line for his career? Bill Laimbeer was another guy you didn't want to put him at the line. Which, you know, the interesting thing about these guys is these are the guys you want to have the ball down the stretch. Instead of always having to be my point guard, I can throw it inside to my big man. You want to foul him? Go ahead. We've kind of lost that these days, haven't we? Number three on our list, a guy that you might not remember. Didn't you just know that a Duke guy would be on here? You had to have a Duke Blue Devil on this list, didn't you? This guy played 14 seasons with the New Jersey Nets. You might remember a little bit more with the Philadelphia 76ers. He was solid. Had 10,000 career points. You usually remembered him as the big white stiff in the middle. But 6'11", Mike Jaminski averaged 84% for his career at the free throw line. Big Mike Jaminski, pretty good free throw shooter. Number two on our list. Number two on our list coming out of college, kind of an unknown guy. He came out, he went to Illinois Wesleyan. He was drafted in 77 by the Seattle Supersonics. Actually won a championship in 79 with Seattle. He was traded over to Milwaukee, spent the last few years of his career as a Milwaukee Buck, which may be where you remember him. And you might look at him and think, here's another big man stiff. I will tell you this. Jack Sikma has had a patented move. You might not realize this, but there is a move that basketball coaches teach called the Sikma move. And Sikma perfected this. And what this move is, if a big man catches the ball down on the block and he has his back to the basket, you reverse pivot to where you step away from the defender and you pull up and you shoot that quick shot. Quick reverse pivot and up and shoot. And Jack Sikma actually was the guy. I'm not saying he invented it, but he was the guy that was where he made his living a lot of times. If you see those old clips of Jack Sikma, the Sikma move, the reverse pivot and straight up into a shot. Jack Sikma shot 85% at the line. Another very, very good big man at the free throw line. Number one on our list. Number one on our list. Big man. And I'll tell you this, because I don't think I mentioned this before. The kind of caveat for me on this list was you had to be at least 6'10". All of our guys, I think, were 6'11" or bigger. You had to be a guy that could play inside. You could do whatever, but you had to be a free throw shooter that shot at least 1,200 professional free throws. So I'm sure there's somebody out there that shot like 6 free throws. We're not putting you on the list. You had to be pretty legit. Number one on our list, top 5 best free throw shooting big men. And it is a lost art. It is a lost art. I heard that Chris Paul was actually kind of saying, and there were mumbles through the Clippers organization, that, you know, DeAndre Jordan doesn't work on his free throws. He doesn't work on them. And there's a number of people that have asked me because, you know, I said last week, give me a day session with some of these guys that struggle at the line. I promise you I can help them a little bit. I've had to teach this to little kids. It's not that hard. So much of this, I think, comes down to two things when you're talking about free throws. I think it is either their technique or they have some kind of psychological block when they're shooting free throws. This guy had none of those things. Number one on our list, best free throw shooting big man. Hey, he's one of the best ever. He absolutely revolutionized the power forward position because of his shooting ability. Because he could go inside, he could hurt you down on the block, he could hurt you down the paint, he could go outside, he could hurt you outside as well. 13-time All-Star, was won the championship in 2011, was named the championship most valuable player, was also named the MVP of the NBA in 2007. And shot 88% from the free throw line as a 7-footer. Dirk Nowitzki is our number one best free throw shooting big man. Hey, great list that Mike sent to us. I want to thank you for sending that out to us, Mike. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Daily Dose Top 5, I've told you, it has a mind of its own. It can go a number of different ways. We get on a number of different subjects. You'd never know. And this week is no exception. Let me ask you a question, listener. We have smart listeners. I would like to know, are you cheering for LeBron James? Are you cheering for him? And I'm not talking about, are you cheering for Cleveland? I understand. Being here in Denver, I have seen victory snatched from the jaws of Cleveland a number of times. But are you cheering for LeBron? Not the city, not the town. Are you cheering for LeBron? Because there are a number of fans who do not like LeBron James. He is a polarizing figure. You either are watching because you love him or you watch him because you hate him. Very, very polarizing. Make no mistake. And I'm going to go through this list here. And our list is the top 5 reasons so many fans do not like LeBron James. Now, I'm going to make a confession to you. Growing up as a kid here in Denver, we obviously, basketball-wise, we had the Nuggets. And I've been watching the Nuggets since back in the ABA days, before the NBA, before we were members of the NBA. But you would watch these other teams, you know, you're watching the Lakers and you're watching the Celtics. And I would watch the Celtics. Especially, you know, Boston, they had their success in the 80s and that kind of thing. And I watched, you know, Larry Bird. Larry Bird was a phenomenal player. But I'm going to be real honest. I'll be transparent about this. Growing up as a kid, I couldn't stand Larry Bird. I hated Larry Bird. I mean, I have gone back now and watching what he does. And I watched him a lot. But going back and just have an appreciation of the game that he played. Because he was such a phenomenal player. He had such a head for the game. And physically, he didn't have all these tools. He certainly didn't have the tools that LeBron had. But he had such a mentalness for the game. He had such a mental aptitude. And he had such a high basketball IQ that he was capable of playing at the highest level. He was capable of making, finding ways to beat you again and again and again and again. And again, he had size, but he didn't have a lot of physical tools. Couldn't jump. Couldn't run. Ran like a pregnant deer. But I didn't really appreciate what he did on the basketball floor. And it took me years to go back and say, yeah, you know, he's a phenomenal player. I hated him as a kid. I couldn't stand him. I would go so far. Sometimes I would even cheer a little bit for the Lakers over the Celtics. I was just so sick of that Celtics team. I couldn't stand them. And the Boston fans and sick of Bird and McHale and all. I couldn't stand it. You might hate LeBron James. Don't fail to appreciate the greatness of LeBron James. He is a phenomenal player. He is an amazing player, and he is one of the greats ever. Do I put him on my Mount Rushmore? Not yet. But this is still a long going process. He's still playing. He's still participating in games. It's not like Magic and Larry and Michael who are done. We've still got to watch him evolve as a player. And he still has a long ways to go. Appreciate what he does. Appreciate what he brings to the game. But I'm going to give you the top five reasons so many fans do not like LeBron James. Number five on our list, and these are rated in order of importance. Number five on the list, the decision part two. Because he was in Miami, but then he decided, I'm going home. What a great guy. He's going to go home. He's going to bring it back to the city that he's from. He's going to go back to Cleveland and try to win them a championship. Yeah, except that it was only because Miami had been run completely into the ground and he didn't have anybody to play with. Bosch was hurt, banged up. Dwayne Wade looks like he's kind of getting to the point at the end of his career. And LeBron looked at the situation and said, hey, I want to go somewhere I can win. So I'll go back there. They've got Kyrie. They've got a number one pick. They can probably move some things around. We can probably put together at least a core group of a team. And I'm going to be more competitive in Cleveland than I would be in Miami. And spin it however you want. There are a number of fans who look at that and say, man, you just jump wherever you can have help. You don't just say, well, hey, I'm in Cleveland. I'm going to do it on my own. I'm in Miami. I'm going to find a way. Yes, we're giving him a ton of credit now. But let's be real clear. He jumped because he thought it was an easier opportunity to go to Cleveland. The decision part two. Don't like LeBron because of it. I'm not saying all these reasons are right. I'm just explaining them. Don't hate me. Number four on our list of why so many people hate LeBron James. He's just overcovered. We get LeBron James jammed down our throat. ESPN could seriously name themselves the LeBron James Network. They blow him up constantly. And we can't just watch and enjoy what he does. Even last night, with the game that went on last night, phenomenal game. LeBron goes out and has another 40. We can't just sit there and say, hey, amazing game. He found a way to win. He got it done. We have to be told constantly how great he is. He's better than Michael. He's better than Bird. He's better than Magic. He's better than Abraham Lincoln, Alexander the Great. He's better than Jesus. Can we just watch the man play? Do we have to get that shoved down our throat all the time? Oh, he's a more complete player. He's a better rebounder. He's a better passer. He's a better defender. I want to just go over some stats real quick, because we keep hearing he's so much better of a passer and rebounder and defender than Michael ever was. Points wise, of course, Jordan is a little bit higher. For his career, Jordan was at 31.5. LeBron was at 27.3. But then, you know, the assists, Jordan was at almost 5.5. LeBron's at 7. It's not that big of a difference. It's not that huge. Rebounding wise, Jordan was at 6.3, LeBron's at 7.1. Against 0.8, we're talking about this huge gap. It's 0.8. And in steals, Michael averaged 2.5 steals and LeBron averages 1.7 steals a game. But here's the difference, and this will always be the difference with me. And people will say, well, could Michael have really led this team from the Cavaliers? Well, he led a horrible franchise in the Bulls. People look at the Bulls and say, well, yeah, they won six. They were garbage when he went there. They were the laughing stock of the NBA when they went there. Michael won six rings. And make no mistake about this. Michael could have won eight rings if he wanted to. He chose not to. He left for 2 years to basically go goof off and play baseball. But he could have won eight. So you can take LeBron in his more complete game and his more rebounds, his, you know, 1.5 more assists and his 0.8, you know, rebounds more, but I'll stick with Michael and I'll take the six rings and eight if I really want them. So I think there's a lot of people that, because we just get LeBron shoved down our throat, oh, he's the best ever. He's the greatest ever. Let's do a special on LeBron. Let's have another LeBron insight look. We just get sick of it. Number three on our list of why so many people hate LeBron James. The decision part one. Left his hometown to go win in Miami. And the, you know, the biggest thing that people look at when they see that hey, Michael never joined up with Magic. He didn't get sick of getting beat in the East, by the Celtics or by the Pistons. So he said, hey, Larry, I'm going to come play with you instead. Isaiah, I'm going to come join your team. He didn't do that. He found a way to win. He won on his own. Everybody says, well, he had Pippen. Understand this. Jordan made Pippen. Everybody, well, yeah, but Pippen's one of the 50th. Yeah, that's because he played with Michael. That's why he's on the top 50. Because when he came in, he was this little scrawny punk from Central Arkansas who had no idea even how to play the game. If you think he would have been that same player playing with you know, maybe Isaiah or somebody else, you're kidding yourself. He is one of the all-time greats because he played with Michael, and Michael made him raise his game. Let me give you just a brief story. I know. I dropped too many of the stories. I know. Pippen, you know, they were playing the Pistons, and every year they're getting knocked out. And in the one game, a very, very pivotal game, it ended up eliminating them. Scottie Pippen had a headache. Migraine headache, had the towel over his head, couldn't play. I can't go. Tried to go out, was having problems with his vision, was having problems seeing, and the Bulls ended up getting knocked out. This is back in the early 90s. The next season, and everybody talked about it. Is Scottie too soft? Is he just not, you know, that kind of gamer? Is he just not, you know, he's just not Michael. He's not that guy that can just step up. He had the migraine. He's just, you know, kind of the way they're talking about, like Kyrie Irving or something like that. He melts under pressure. The next season, they go out and they're playing the Pistons again. And in that game, one of the early games in the series, Scottie Pippen goes out and he's just horrible. He's just bad. Does not have a good game. Can't hit anything, not defending very well, just really, really struggling. And the game ends, the Bulls lose, and they walk out to the bus, and nobody wants to say anything. Nobody wants to anger Michael Jordan. Jordan is fierce. We've talked about what a competitor he was. You don't want to say anything. Everybody's on the bus sitting quietly, and everyone knows that MJ is just seething, just so angry that Scottie, again, another year, but same old Scottie, he lets us down at crunch time. Nobody says anything. They're sitting on the bus. Michael gets on the bus, and everybody's kind of waiting. What's he going to say? Is he going to light into Scottie? Is he going to scream at everybody? You guys are soft. What's wrong with you? Michael gets on the bus and looks back at Scottie and just says, another headache, Scottie? People don't realize that the reason Scottie Pippen is one of the 50 greatest, if you believe that, I think that's probably a little bit overrated. That's just me. It was because Michael made him be that way. Don't get that confused. Some of the reason we hate LeBron James is he didn't always make his players. He went and said, hey, you know, I'm just going to go find new players. I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go somewhere else and I'm going to find different players to play. I'm going to go play with Dwayne Wade. He's way better than what I had back in Cleveland. He's way better than the guys that I drug to the finals that year. I'm going to go play with Chris Bosh. He understands. He can figure out how to play with me. I'm going to go play with him. He's way better than what I had in Cleveland. There are people that will never ever forget LeBron for not being able to raise teammates around him to a higher level and make them be great like MJ did with Scottie Pippen. Number two on the list. And this is my personal beef with LeBron. And this is just my own personal issue. I told you I look for body language a lot of times. It's the drama that goes with LeBron James. It's constant drama. He can't ever win a game, make a move, get fouled, have an injury without it just being this complete stage show. Everything is some like WWE drama. He's one of the most calculated people, and nothing ever looks authentic with him. It's never a twisted ankle. It's a fractured compound fracture, and he's falling down, and he's dying, and he's got to be taken. It's never a foul. It looks like he got hit with like sniper fire, like a little guard. Steph Curry will bump him and he'll hit the ground and oh, he's writhing in pain. I think that's one of my personal beefs with LeBron sometimes when I watch it. I'm like, dude, can't you just take a foul? Yeah, I got fouled and walked to the free throw line and hit him. He's got, oh, he falls down and he's holding his side and then he gets up and goes shit. For being the biggest and strongest, sometimes we hear he's the biggest, strongest NBA player ever. Sometimes you look a little bit delicate. I mean, you shouldn't be knocked completely off your feet by 180-pound Steph Curry, but we see it constantly. When you win a game, like, you know, there was like a game three game against Atlanta or whatever, you know, earlier in this playoff run, and he's like laying on the floor and he's just, ah, we did it. We finally did it. Easy. You're not in a school play. Can you just get up and, yeah, we beat the Hawks. We should beat the Hawks. We should sweep the Hawks. We expect this. There's a little bit too much drama. It's like he's acted every move out he's done in front of a mirror before he goes out and tries it out live on the floor. For me personally, I get a little tired of all the drama. That's just me. reasons a lot of people can't stand LeBron James. And the number one reason why so many people do not like LeBron James, he's really, really good. We wouldn't care if he was horrible. We wouldn't care if he lost. If he was losing all these games and he wasn't very good and he came in and showed up when he wanted to and some nights he had good nights and other nights he was very, very average, we would not care one bit. He would just be another Carmelo Anthony. He wouldn't even be on our radar. We wouldn't pay attention. One of the reasons we hate LeBron James is because he's really, really good and he wins. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. It was announced this week, Kobe Bryant is playing in his final season. He's going to retire after the year. Kobe is a different guy. He's a different guy. He's not that warm and cuddly guy. You know, we came through that era where you had the Magic, you had the Michael, you had those kind of players. Kobe's not that kind of guy. He's not endearing. And his career has been a lesson in kind of in contradictions. Because when you think about Kobe Bryant, and he is one of the great players ever, he's one of the great scorers ever. But it's kind of interesting because every side of Kobe Bryant that you see, there's kind of another side to it. I mean, think about it just for a second. He's one of the greatest scorers ever. When he was in his prime, I know it's easy to pile on him now that he can't find the rim, but when he was in his prime, you wanted him taking the big shot. And it didn't matter who was against, it didn't matter how much time was on the clock, you wanted Kobe taking that shot. But if you were drafting an all-time team, you might not want him on your team. He's one of the greatest Lakers to ever play. He might be, maybe, not in my opinion, but he might be the greatest Laker to ever play. But he was never loved like Magic. Never. I don't know if he was loved as much as Kareem. And Kareem was a rough guy to get to like. He's compared to Michael Jordan. But, and as great of a scorer as he was, and as many he had the championships and he had, with Michael, you had some of those iconic moments. You think of some of the iconic moments in Jordan's life, whether it was the slam dunk contest from the free throw line, or whether it was the shot against Elo, or whether it was the shot against the Jazz, coming back, getting the steal, hitting the shot against the Jazz to win the whole championship, standing on the table, the six up. Kobe doesn't have those moments. Name the iconic moment that Kobe has. It just didn't work that way. I don't know why. I don't know why it didn't come out that way for Kobe. It just didn't. And that's not a slight on him. I'm actually not bagging on Kobe Bryant. He's just a guy that has a lot of contradictions. Right now, we are going to give you our Daily Dose top five defining Kobe Bryant moments. Notice I didn't say greatest Kobe Bryant moments. He had a number of great moments. But he had defining moments. And like Kobe, there are a lot of contradictions in each one of these moments. Top five defining Kobe Bryant moments. You can't bring up the career. And I know Laker fans, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. I know I'm not supposed to bring this up, but you can't bring up Kobe Bryant's career without mentioning the sexual assault case that took place in Colorado in 2003. He was arrested in connection with a sexual assault that took place in a hotel where he was doing some rehab. Say whatever you want about it. It tarnished his reputation. His reputation took a shot. His career, in some ways, took a shot from that. But you know one of the things that stands out to me about that? And the court case was dismissed, but the civil case was settled out of court, and he did pay a substantial amount of money. I'm not going to sit here and try to go guilty or innocent. Not my point here. But what I do want to think about through all of that, and again, contradictions with Kobe Bryant, was remember he was flying from Colorado out to Los Angeles, and he was kind of getting away from that court case by going out to Los Angeles and playing in those games, or flying to where the team was and playing in those games. And he was playing at a high, high level during all of that. It's a strange situation. It is a defining moment, though, because you look at him and you say, you're in this bizarre, I remember him sitting at the table with the wife and she won't look him in the eyes and it was really awkward and he's apologizing and crying. Horrible moment. But remember how well he was playing during that time? It was absolutely surreal. It was bizarre. And it was absolutely kind of part of who Kobe Bryant is. Yeah, that's kind of the kind of guy he is. He's a lot of contradictions. Number four on our list. The 81 points he scored on Toronto. Second highest single game total in NBA history. Lakers beat the Raptors 122-104. But again, it's kind of about contradictions. Took almost 50 shots. And I'm not saying he didn't shoot the ball well. He did. He went 28 for 46. He went 7 of 13 from three-point line. And he went 18 of 20 at the free throw line. But again, contradictions. A lot of people look at that and say, wow, 81 points. And a lot of people look at that and say, who would shoot that many times? Yeah, if Jordan shot 50 times, he would have scored 90 points too. Contradictions with Kobe Bryant. By the way, you might not believe this, but in that 81-point game, he did actually have two assists. I know, I'm just throwing that out there. Number three on our defining Kobe Bryant moments. His record in elimination games. You can't take this part out of it. Kobe Bryant is a phenomenal scorer. Kobe Bryant is one of the greatest players to ever play. But you know his record in elimination games? So it's a game five or a game seven, a game where his team can be eliminated. He was 9-10 in elimination games. And here's the stranger part about it. He averaged 22.5 points a game. Now you might hear that and say, well, that doesn't sound too bad. Here's just a kind of a look at how some of the other players considered greats have done in elimination games. In elimination games, LeBron James averages 31.5 points per game. In elimination games, Michael Jordan averaged 31.3 points a game. Wilt, 31.1. Even Allen Iverson averaged 29.8. I don't know what it was. I don't know if Bryant, because I always got the feeling, remember when the Pistons took them out in 2004 and the Lakers had all those big names, but the Pistons had more of a team? And even after the game, you almost got the feeling from Kobe Bryant that he was like, I still don't think you're better than us. But sometimes elimination games, he didn't play like that. Contradictions. And he still had kind of that pride where he said, no, I'm not gonna say you're better than me, but he didn't actually always produce in elimination games. 9-10 as a record. And didn't always put up the big points that he usually did. Part of his career, part of defining Kobe Bryant. Number two on our list. Top five defining Kobe Bryant moments has to be the championships. He won five of them. He won five championships. That's an amazing run for anyone. But it's also about contradictions. Because he was only the MVP in two of them. Shaquille O'Neal was kind of the big dog on a few of those teams. Now, having said that, on the two that he won, where he was the MVP in 2009 and 2010, when he went back, he absolutely carried those teams. I mean, he had Pau Gasol, and he didn't have a whole lot else. Robert Horry? I don't even know. He carried those teams. Didn't have Shaquille O'Neal, though. Finally got rid of that. And you know what is weird? Getting rid of Shaquille O'Neal, while you would look at it and say, I finally got rid of the guy that's getting all the fame, I'm finally going to get all the fame, it kind of hurt Kobe to get rid of him. Not on the court. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about everyone's perception of Kobe. Oh, he didn't want to share the spotlight. It's all about him. He's selfish. Whether that's true or whether that's perceived, that was what a lot of people took from it. He got rid of Shaq, thought it would help him. In a way, all people did was look at him and say, yeah, just because he's selfish. Kobe Bryant, guy of contradictions. Our number one moment, defining Kobe Bryant moment. I think this kind of captures it. And I know it's sad to think of our superstars when they get to the end of the road. I never liked seeing Michael Jordan in that Washington Wizards jersey. It bothered me. I don't like right now. There is a part of me that is pained to see Peyton Manning at the level he is playing right now. It's just kind of to see Tiger Woods, to see that kind of thing, to see Kobe Bryant over the last few years where it was just constant injury after injury. And you just saw his body just break down on him and over and over again, he couldn't trust his body. It just continued to let him down again and again and again. But number one defining moment, I think it kind of captures who Kobe Bryant was. April 12th, 2013 versus Golden State. Bryant gets fouled on a shot and goes down holding his ankle. We all look at it and we say, well, he got fouled. He twisted his ankle or whatever. He limps back onto the floor. He knocks down the two free throws on one foot. Wasn't a bad ankle. He ruptured his Achilles. Kobe Bryant was tough. Kobe Bryant was clutch. When you needed the big shot, like I said, when he was in his prime, he was as good as anybody with the game on the line. But eventually, Father Time gets all of us. Now, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like I said, like we were just talking about, the NBA is above reproach when it comes to competitive integrity, right? There's no reason to doubt them. So when I hear that they're not going to suspend Draymond Green from the Oklahoma City series because they're down 3-1, well, that's just how things work out. They just, for whatever reason, they just didn't feel like he needed to be suspended there. Sure, it was a flagrant too. Sure, it was called right there on the floor. But whatever. He didn't really need to be suspended. Yes, he had already racked up the points and they accumulated the points or whatever, but he didn't need to be suspended. But now he gets a flagrant one on a kind of iffy call. Yes, LeBron probably baited into him. He shouldn't have done it. Throwing the arm out there does put yourself at risk. But then I see the NBA kind of switch that and say, well, now we're going to suspend him because they're up 3-1, so they can afford a little more. There's no reason to doubt the NBA on this, is there? Well, there's probably not a single reason to doubt the NBA on this, is there? Not when it comes to competitive integrity, right? Yeah, there's probably not one reason. There's probably like 1,000 reasons. Today's Daily Dose Top 5, the top 5 NBA conspiracies. They probably aren't true. They're probably, and the whole Draymond Green thing, not being suspended and then being, that's just all a wacky coincidence, right? Right? Well, let's see. Because some of these, I'll be honest, some of these that made, and they're the most popular conspiracies. It's not necessarily that I picked the nastiest ones or the ones that really, really look the worst. They're just the most popular ones. I just picked the most popular. But here's a few conspiracies that have happened in the NBA that might make you reconsider. Number 5 on our list. Michael Jordan's first retirement. The big rumor was that the reason he retired that first time was that it was dictated by the league because of all his gambling. We do know that the NBA was investigating Jordan's gambling habits. Of course, nothing came of it. And Jordan's dad had been, you know, murdered, and he wanted to get away from basketball, and he wanted to go live a dream that his dad had actually talked to him about. You know, you ought to quit and go play baseball. You ought to quit and go play baseball. So he quit and he went and played baseball. But I know that there's a lot of people that look at that and say, well, yeah, that was because the league made him leave. Now, I can't come up with a reason why the league would be like, we want less money. Like, everybody here has decided we're all okay. Guys, you okay? You okay with it? We're all okay? Yeah, we all want less money. Nobody here wants to make money. And so we want you to leave for a while. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but popular conspiracy theory when it comes to the NBA. Number 4 on our list. The NBA prefers large market teams. Something to think about. Just a small stat that I'd like you to keep in the back of your mind. In the past 36 years, there's only been 10 different franchises that have won the championship. Only 10? In 36 years? Yeah, you go over to like the NFL, there's a few more than that, isn't there? Go over to Major League Baseball, quite a few teams have won it. But in the NBA, 10 in 30, and it's probably, we could probably put a lot more years into that. But here's the teams that have won it. Here's the cities that have won it. See what they all have in common. See if these cities have anything in common. Los Angeles, the San Francisco Bay Area, Boston, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Miami. What do they all have in common? That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. They all have a lot of fans. And they all bring in huge TV ratings and huge sponsorship deals. Pretty amazing how that works, isn't it? Just a coincidence. I know. Number 3. Top 5 NBA conspiracies. Has to be the 1985 draft. You know how every once in a while, there's this sure thing at the top of the draft? It doesn't happen, and we haven't seen it happen in quite a while. But you know, you'll have the Shaquille O'Neal, You'll have the Tim Duncan. You'll have the LeBron James. Well, 1985 had that big time with Georgetown center Patrick Ewing. Everyone looked at Ewing and said, dude, this guy is he's going to be a great player for a long time. And at the time, what the NBA did when they did their lottery, so now you have the ping pong balls and whatever, and we can discuss how, if that's clean or not. But what the NBA would do is they would take like the bottom six or seven teams. They would put the names in a big envelope, and then they would put the envelope in a big clear drum. They would spin the drum. They would randomly, of course, select who got the top pick. They would take the big envelope out. They would go set it under the team name, and then they would all open them and see who got first pick. So here were the teams that were in it in 1985. New York, Indiana, the Clippers, Seattle, Atlanta, Sacramento, and Golden State all had an envelope. They all had an envelope. Of course, we know that the NBA likes large market teams. We just talked about that on number four. New York, it would be kind of nice if the Knicks were good every once in a while. And the rumor is that the envelope for the Knicks had been frozen so that when David Stern reached his dirty little grubby hand in there, he would be able to find the cold one and put it up first. That's the rumor. There's also a rumor that the envelope was bent. It had a little bend in it. Now, you might sit there and say, well, what difference does it make? Here's the thing. If you go back and you watch this, it's on YouTube. You can go find it. When the guy comes out there, he has a stack of like six or seven envelopes. He tosses all of them in. He just kind of sets them in the bottom of the drum. One of them, he bangs against the side of the drum. Maybe it's just coincidence. I don't know. I don't have any idea. But here's how the draft went. First pick, the Knicks got Patrick Ewing. With the second pick, Indiana got Wayman Tisdale. The Clippers took Benoit Benjamin. Seattle took Xavier McDaniel. Atlanta took big man John Konkak. Sacramento got Joe Klein. And the Golden State Warriors ended up with Chris Mullin. But the Knicks got exactly who they wanted. Kind of amazing how that worked out, isn't it? Pretty impressive. The 1985 draft comes in at number three. Number two on our list, top five NBA conspiracies, has to be the 2007 NBA playoff game between the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. This was game four. The Spurs were up 2-1. The Suns took the lead late in the game, and Spurs forward Robert Horry body checks Suns point guard Steve Nash into the scoring table. Horry was ejected. Nash is knocked into the, this is a hard hit. This is a football hit. He blasted him. Horry gets ejected, but Suns players, Rajah Bell, Amari Stoudemire, and Boris Diaw all left the bench to go make sure Steve Nash was, you know, alive, still functioning, still had a pulse. And, you know, it's kind of amazing. It just kind of worked out this way. But when they all got up to see how Nash was doing, kind of go to his aid, after the game, which the Suns, by the way, won, they held on and won the game. They won game four. The NBA suspended those players for leaving the bench. There was no fight. There was no real scuffle. They got up. They went and checked on their teammate. But David Stern said, nope. You left the bench. Sorry. Got to suspend you. That's the letter of the law. That's what we have to do here. That's just how business works here at the NBA. We do things by the letter of the law, except when we don't. Needless to say, the Suns would lose the next two games without their top players. Those are pretty good players they lost. Stoudemire and Boris Diaw. Are you kidding me? That's not even close. Spurs went on to finish it in six. Suns never won another game. Number two on our list, Suns versus Spurs in 2007. And the number one conspiracy on our list. What else could it be? This is the one. 2002. Game six. The lowly, small market Sacramento Kings actually led the Lakers 3-2 in this series. And if they won this game, they would be going to the NBA Finals. The game was tied going into the fourth quarter. And in the fourth quarter, the Los Angeles Lakers shot 27 free throws. At one point in the game, Kobe Bryant full-on elbowed Mike Bibby directly in his face right in front of an official. No call, no foul. Now you might sit there and say, well, you're biased. that you're biased. You know who's not biased? NBA reporter, Washington DC columnist Mike Wilbon, who said, I counted at least 6 stunning calls, and every single one of them went against the Kings. Sacramento forward Chris Webber said that the game felt sinister. It didn't matter what we did. We knew they would call it against us. The Lakers won 106-102. Then they eked out a game 7 that was very, very close. And of course, rogue NBA ref Tim Donaghy said, oh yeah, the fix was in on that one. You had to check the spread. You had to know how that was going to go. They wanted that series to go 7. They wanted to make sure that the Lakers won, and they did. They made sure of it by awarding free throw after free throw down the stretch. I don't know. You know, of course, the Lakers ended up winning Game 7. They went to the finals. They beat the New Jersey Nets. So when I see Draymond Green not suspended when he's down 3-1, and then get suspended when the Warriors are up 3-1, it makes me wonder just a little bit. Would the NBA manipulate the outcome of games? I mean, could that happen? Well, I don't know. But they may have before. As we do every week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5, you know it has a mind of its own. You know it goes a number of different ways. But you know, like I told you before, I was down in Texas this week. There are a lot of people around the country that love watching Steph Curry play. Steph Curry, his game, it's a little bit different. And it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of changing a little bit of the game that we've grown up watching. And the reason for that, at least to me, when you watch Steph Curry play, and I'll be honest, there are certain players that I like to watch. There are certain players that I'm not that thrilled with watching. There are guys that are kind of must-see if they're on. Steph Curry to me is must-see. Because you never know what he's going to do. And the reason to me that he's kind of changing the game is because when you look at him, it's not a physical thing. It's not where you look at him and you say, well, physically, he's just so good. He's just such a good player physically. Well, he's not a very big guy. I mean, it's not like he's just overpowering. It's not like when you look at LeBron, you look at LeBron James and you say, he's bigger, he's stronger, he's faster. I mean... He's this freak of nature physically. That's not the case with Steph Curry at all. Steph Curry isn't this guy that's bigger, stronger, faster than everyone else. I mean, he's maybe 6'3", like a 180 dripping wet. But you know, the interesting thing about Steph Curry's game is when you look at it, it's not all the dunks. It's not the Michael Jordan playing above the rim or the Kobe Bryant or, you know, the Patrick Ewing. It's not this big, huge guy. It's not LeBron James he's just bigger than everyone else. Even someone like Kevin Durant, who has a little bit more of a smoothness to a game, more of an outside game, but he's still, you know, he's like 6'10". So, I mean, there's an idea with Steph Curry that you look at it and say, you know what? If we all just practice, couldn't we play like Steph Curry? I mean, it's not like he's this freak physically that's so much better than everyone else. He's just a really, really good player. He's just honed his game so much that when you look at his game, it's kind of changing the game because you say, if I worked hard enough, couldn't I do that? It's not physically. He's not 7 feet tall. He can't just jump out of the gym. But he has certain aspects to his game that make it so fun to watch. Today's Daily Dose Top 5, players that Steph Curry's game resembles. Now, after him coming back from that concussion the other night, obviously the first player on the list might be Julian Edelman and what he did in the Super Bowl after he sustained a concussion, but we're not going to put Julian Edelman on this list. But I'm going to give you 5 players that when I look at Steph Curry play, kind of makes me think of, because he does have a different game than we're seeing anywhere else, and so much of his game is his knowledge of the game, his understanding of the game, his intelligence. It's not that physical domination that we've always seen. Number 5 on our list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles, has to be his dad, Del Curry. He has such a quick release. He can get that shot off so quickly. He doesn't need much space. So many young shooters, and in coaching kids, and in coaching even high school kids, sometimes even college kids, they kind of have to load up that shot. It's catch, set, and shoot. He has such a quick release. It's catch and shoot, and it's gone. If you want to see Del Curry's release, you can go onto YouTube and look up when he scored 14 points in the fourth quarter versus the Detroit Pistons. He was playing with Toronto at the time. It was back in like 2002. Final game of Del Curry's professional career. But it is such a quick release. Now you say, okay, quick release, how much does that do for you? Well, it's a quick release and it's very, very accurate. But the thing about that quick release is it changes the other parts of your game. Because if you know you've got to fly at me because I can get that shot off so quickly, I now have the shot fake. I now have the beat you off the dribble. I have so many other aspects to my game that are all opened up from that quick release. You want to study how to shoot the ball. I've always told kids, if you want to study some of the greatest shooters, study someone like Ray Allen, somebody like Reggie Miller. Now you got to take a look at Steph Curry. But if you want to see his release back about, 15, 20 years ago, go look at Del Curry. He's out there. He shoots it just like his dad did. Number four on the list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles. And when I say this, you're going to say, what? What are you talking about? Looks a little bit like Kobe Bryant. Wait. Don't turn it off. Don't turn it off. Defensively, he looks a little bit like Kobe Bryant. Because, and I know Laker fans, you're going to hate hearing this, Kobe Bryant has never been a great defender. He was okay at times, but he wasn't a great defender. And if you want to sit there and say, yes, he was. Should I bring up Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton in 2004? Because they abused Kobe and made him look foolish defensively. He was very, very athletic, but he never, that wasn't his thing. He was a sniper. He was a scorer. Defense, but what Kobe did and what Kobe understood, and this is what I'm starting to see in Steph Curry, what Kobe understood was that if I anticipate and I play the passing angles correctly, I can sneak over. I can do some stuff off the ball. Never going to be a great lockdown defender. Kobe was never a great lockdown defender. Anyone who tells you he was didn't watch it enough. But he was very, very good at sneaking off of his man, getting steals, sneaking off of his man, poking the ball loose and getting a teammate, a steal. In 2002, 2003, Kobe Bryant had 181 steals. Now, steals rarely come when I'm defending on ball. Every once in a while against, players that are inferior. But usually those come in help situations when I sneak over and I get a steal. It's because of your anticipation. It's because of your knowledge of the game. And Kobe Bryant was able to do that really, really well at times in his career. Do you know how many steals Steph Curry had this year? And I look at Steph Curry and I say, he's not a good defender. He had 163 steals this year. 163. It's the same kind of thing. He understands. He knows how to anticipate where the ball is going to go. His court savvy and his game awareness is so high that he finds ways to hide things defensively. Number three on our list that Steph Curry's game resembles a little bit. Gotta be Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller worked so hard without the ball. And I think Steph still has a long way to go in this regard because Reggie was constant. He never stopped moving. Every once in a while, you'll see Steph make a pass. He'll go weak side and he'll kind of stand and wait for a reversal. Reggie never stopped moving. It was running off of screens. It was coming off of angles. It was getting into the body of the defender and breaking off. Steph still has a ways to go here, but Steph Curry can be that type of player. And every once in a while, when you see him constantly moving, he resembles, again, without the ball, not shooting it, just his movement without the ball looks a little bit like Reggie Miller to me. Number two on our list, players that Steph Curry's game resembles, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. You might remember him back at LSU as Chris Jackson. But let me tell you why his game reminds me of his. And, back in 1996, the Chicago Bulls came to Denver and faced the Nuggets. I was fortunate enough to go see that game in person. Got to see Michael Jordan and those 96 Bulls with Rodman and Pippen and Ron Harper. And phenomenal team. One of the best teams ever. And somehow, the Nuggets actually beat them 105-99. Jordan had 39. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf had 32 in a victory. But the thing about Mahmoud such a good shooter. He also had a very, very quick release. Didn't need much space. He was only about 6'1", but he could get that shot off very, very quickly. He was a very, very underrated ball handler, just like Steph is. But if you watch, you can go back. You could probably Google that game. Go Google a game where Mahmoud scored, I think, like 51 on John Stockton against the Jazz. He had such a quick ball handle. Had it on a string. He was so deceptive with it, and it was so quick. Everyone always talked about the Tim Hardaway crossover. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's crossover was better than Hardaway's. It was so quick, and he changed speed, and he changed direction so quickly that he would lean one way and explode off the other side and beat a defender, and again, with that quick release, could get that shot off very, very quickly. A number of times that I look at Steph and think of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a very, very underrated ball handler. Number one on our list of players that Steph Curry's game resembles. Again, I'm not saying he's that guy. I'm not saying he's better than that guy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are aspects of his game that resemble that. As a playmaker, doesn't he remind you just a little bit of Larry Bird? He just sees the floor so well. He understands the game so well. We talked before, he has that basketball IQ. I understand where you're going to be. I understand if I drive here, what the defense is going to do. And as a result, I know that this guy is open. As a playmaker, there are times that his game is almost right on the edge of being like Pete Maravich. Sometimes it's almost kind of showy, even. Kind of the look away pass and make the pass for the layup, or look away and make the lob for the dunk. He's such an underrated passer that it makes it so much fun to watch. His playmaking ability at times reminds you just a little bit of Larry Bird. And again, all this stuff is below the rim. It's not this jumping and dunking. That's not his game. I don't even know if I've ever seen the kid dunk. But I love watching Steph Curry because he is changing the game. He is making it a little bit of a thinking man's game. And as you know, the Daily Dose is the thinking man's sports talk.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we will see if my dad is feeling up to returning or if he can afford my salary in these tough economic times. But either way, you know that we will keep you on top of all things sports, as only we can. Want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails, texts, and tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But most of all, thank you for sharing the show, sharing the videos, sharing the articles. We love it when you do that. Have to say, special thank you to JSP, especially the P, because we really could not have done any of this episode without you. We will see you next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody. Especially the P.